You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Everybody, I want to welcome you to the Conversation Podcast. My name is Adam, and I am excited. I can't believe we're over halfway through the month of August. My kids, they go back to school later this week. I think my wife, I can hear her rejoicing in the background. And I'm also excited because yesterday, my second book, new book called Love Has a Name, released. I am so grateful for all of you who have ordered yourself a copy, blown away by friends who are sharing about it online, humbled by the different podcasts and interviews and shows that I've been able to be on. I am so grateful. If you have not gotten yourself a copy, I'd be thrilled. Go online to Amazon, Target, Walmart, Barnes & Noble and order yourself a copy. Also, I'd be grateful if you'd help spread the word as well. Take a screenshot of your order and share that online. Take a picture of your book when it comes in the mail and spread that as well. If you need a graphic or two or some wording to help you, you can go to adamweber.com/social and there's some graphics that you can share. And so I'm excited about this brand new book. Today, though, is part two of an interview. We released it this week with my brother, my friend, my teammate, Travis Waltner. We sat down and we talked about my family. Again, this is kind of weird for me to be interviewed on my own podcast, but I was grateful he was willing to do so. So we talked about my family, my wife, my kids, what I've learned about parenting, what I've learned, which is very little about marriage. We've been married 16 years now. And then we shifted the conversation and talked about how the book came about, how actually both books came about, and really my heartbeat of where the book came from and what I hope is the takeaway from this book. And so, again, I am so grateful. I wish I could give all of you a long, awkward hug. Anytime someone releases something like a book or a big project or whatever it might be for work, it's a team effort. And so I'm just really honored that I get to share this book with the world. But as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation.
Hey guys, this is Travis, and I am hosting the Conversation Podcast. I don't typically do this. Your boy Adam Weber usually does.
What's up?
But for this series, we've been interviewing Adam and just getting to know him a little bit better. This is actually part two. Part one, we covered a little bit of Adam's background, where he grew up, how he came to faith in Christ, seminary, and how he ended up starting a church. So if you haven't checked that out, make sure you do that. Go back and listen to part one. But we're going to part two. We're going to cover a little bit more about his family and writing a book. He's an author, which makes you a really big deal.
Yeah,
like you are a really big deal. I actually looked this up. On your Twitter handle, you list first in your bio, author.
These are total lies.
That is it. No, I'm just kidding.
If you ever see that, know that someone has hacked my account. It's not true. I feel like these two episodes are like a counseling session or something. Like, let's process your past. Let's share your deep, dark secrets. No one else is listening except a few thousand people.
We could do that. I feel like last time I would love to tell you, you're wrong. That's not right. You shouldn't live that way. But I just kind of let you talk, which is actually good counseling, probably. But like I said, we're in part two, just kind of looking at your life a little bit. And like you said, like I think, you know, this is something with releasing the book, like people have kind of asked, you've been a little bit hesitant, like, man, I don't really want to share about myself. But it's been cool to get to know you. I think for people, like to get to know you a little bit better. And so I want you to tell me a little bit about your family, though. You're not single.
Not single.
At least as of last week, when we talked to you, weren't. You're not single. You have a bunch of rugrats running around. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So this past Friday night, Becky and I celebrated 16 years of marriage. Had an awesome night Friday night, just celebrating and really enjoying each other's company. Beck and I, we met when I filled in for a pastor up in Wahpeton, North Dakota, the summer before my senior year of college. We had met one other time before that on Easter of my sophomore year of college. My pastor is her uncle. And so that's how we met one time. And then I filled in for her dad. And that summer, I got every signal from her that she was not interested in me at all. She ignored me. She seemed angry towards me. And I was positive she wasn't interested in me. And the very last day we were in Wahpeton, North Dakota, my mom came up to help me pack up our stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm never coming back to this town. Yeah, I thought Becky was cute, but I'm just like, I'd written it off as not an option. It's not going to happen. On my way home with all of my possessions in my car, my mom says, "You'll never guess who I talked with." And I said, "Who?" And she said, "I talked with Becky Spard's mom." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Thinking to myself, like, she's not going to say anything. Well, Becky Spar's mom is wondering why you never pursued her daughter because she's interested in you.
So let me get this right. You have so much game that your mom has to set this up.
So much game. I was so ticked. I'm like, who tells somebody this their last day in town? And I was the king of being the guy who said in college, long distance relationships don't work, blah, blah, blah. I'm on the interstate. I just wanted to grab the wheel, go through the ditch, and just move back to Wahpeton. But I actually went on a trip that next week. I went on a trip because I was going to visit seminary because I knew I was going to be a pastor. So I went to visit Asbury in Kentucky, and I went to Washington, D.C. to see my brother at the time. And on the trip there, I wrote a letter to her, and she didn't respond to it. And so I was like, what? I thought you were interested in me.
What did you write in that letter? Did you like kind of pour your heart out?
It was just like, hey, I heard from the streets that you were interested in me.
You said that in the letter? No. Oh, God.
Gosh. It would have been the lamest thing ever. Hey, your mom told my mom.
So that was like, that was ghosting before ghosting was ghosting, right?
Yeah, I'm like, what is happening here? Like, she, no response. So I'm just like, well, this is done. Like, I'm not doing this anymore. I wrote, no response. Well, I used to help with a festival in Sioux Falls called Lifelight. I'd ran the stage 2, which is like all the punk rock, heavy, like Solid State, Tooth and Nail Records type people. And I heard through her cousin, again, my pastor's son, that she was coming down to the festival. I'm like, oh, that's crazy. And the whole time she came, she was at stage 2. And I'm just like, maybe she is interested. So I went and talked, ended up getting her on stage for Jeremy Camp. He was like the headliner that year. Got her on stage. The next week, we exchanged numbers that day. And we started dating October 4th of 2003. Got engaged December 27th, 2003, got married that next August.
So did you, you've had Jeremy Camp on this podcast. Did you tell him that, he was a
I did. And that was one of the most awkward things I've ever told someone. You could hear him on the other end was like, okay, I'm not sure what to do with that information. People will randomly tell me fun facts like about their life that I don't know what to do with. We were actually listening to, a message of yours in the background when we made out for the first time.
No one said that.
No one's ever said that, but it's that type of information that you're like, I don't know what to do with that. Like,
has anybody in the history of the world made out to a message? I don't think that's ever.
Your preaching is what led to our children. So we got engaged, we got married. So I mean, like literally October dating, December engaged, August married. The next day we left Wahpeton, North Dakota and drove to Lexington, Kentucky, where I started seminary. So went to seminary, loved it. We came back, had a child right before leaving there. Hudson Ray is my oldest. He's going into eighth grade this year. Just absolutely loves the Lord. He's already a few chapters in the book. He is just like the most studious. And he's like, Dad, this book is so much better than your first one. Dad, in the car yesterday, Dad, I really think this is going to explode. God's behind this. And I'm like, man alive, I got the best. So I don't know where he comes from. Yeah. So that's awesome. Wilson, my second son, Wilson Moses is our Ethiopian. Crazy about that kid. It's been so cool to see him grow just in so many ways. He's going to be a sixth grader this year, his first year in middle school. Excited about him. We share sports and football in common. So we throw football a lot together and frisbee. And then my daughter, Grayson, she's in third grade. Grayson Marie, didn't know we were able to have girls, but we did. And I'm crazy about her. I call her baby. And it's been cool seeing God at work in her too. We've been going through the kids' Jesus calling together, and it's just been cool to see the conversations we've had there. And then Anderson Adam is my kindergartner. He's 5 years old, total surprise, did not want him, and he's a spitting image of me in every way. I love him so much. He loves old stuff, old cars, old tractors. We hang out constantly. He's one of my best buddies. So each of the kids, it's so cool. I'm so grateful for them. So that's four kids. If we have any other children, I'll go crazy. We've considered adoption at some point, maybe. Becky would be like, we have. We've talked about fostering. I think once our kids get a little older, maybe we'll do that. But that's kind of the home front and the family. And that's my family. Becky is the writer of the two of us. She just got a post published on crosswalk.com, which was super, super cool. And I genuinely think she's going to write a book at some time because that's something she's passionate about. And I'm thankful for my wife and kids.
So, family man, what is one piece of advice, well, actually two pieces of advice that you give about marriage and parenting that you've learned personally from your kind of experience?
Yeah, advice marriage-wise, you're going to connect with God differently. I think just understanding that you are uniquely wired and beginning to see those as a blessing, those traits as a blessing rather than a curse, rather than constant sandpaper, realizing, no, this is a gift. It's a gift that your wife doesn't want to be around people 24/7.
Yeah.
It's a gift that your wife doesn't talk with every random stranger like I do.
Yep.
It's a gift that she connects with God differently. She's not this huge audible prayer person. She's more of a sit and think about a message or think about scripture she's reading, and then she'll randomly share about it. Instead of like having a time where we're going to get together and connect, whatever, it'll just be this random time that she'll share. So I think allowing those differences and really seeing them as a strong suit rather than something to fight against.
Yeah.
And also I think understanding this has been the cool dance that we've really learned and something I've loved about Becky. When we go up north, we spend a lot of time at her family's house. I like to go 24/7.
Yep.
For me, a relaxing weekend is nonstop moving, doing projects, doing things, seeing random festivals, going to a bakery that I've heard has this unique donut. Like, I mean, like randomly stopping at a farm that has an old car in their trees and asking if I can get out and see it. I don't even want to buy it. I just want to hear the story about how it got there. And so like, I'm nonstop going. Well, before when we first got married, she really thought it was like, I don't love your family or something. Like, why don't, like, she didn't know why I didn't want to sit with them and be with them. I wanted to go do something. So now oftentimes what we'll do is she'll say, hey, go sit at a coffee shop. And then we'll hang out. And then at noon, we'll go out for a meal together. And you won't have all this like pent up whatever. So I'll go sit at a coffee shop or I'll go to an antique store. Mm-hmm. And it's just so cool to figure out that dance. And then like, I know she loves to work out and I know she loves to go shopping. So, hey, you go, I'll watch the kids. And it's kind of figuring out that dance together instead of, again, just constantly grating at each other. I really feel like we've hit a sweet spot in that area. Yeah. So that's that. Parenting-wise, just get engaged in what they want to get engaged with. And that's not my advice. I'm stealing someone else's advice. But when you're invited into something, hey, Dad, want to play croquet? We have a croquet set. We play it a lot. Hey, Dad, want to go on a ride? Do you want to play Frisbee? Instead of being like, no, but would you want to go do something I want to do? In that moment, it's like, no, like I wanted to play Frisbee with you, Dad, or I wanted to play, instead of like doing something different, they're inviting you in. That's not going to be there forever.
That's so good.
But if you foster it, maybe it will be there for a long time. Yeah. And even when they're too cool for school and in high school, hey, Dad, want to play croquet? Yeah, I'd love to. I hope to engage in the things they're doing. The other thing, this is a new piece of advice for me too. I'm stealing it, but we've really been trying to live into it, is making our house a place they want to be. Like whether it's having a new game system, which seems shallow, or having something fun, like a new football to play in the backyard, like just be in the house where they want to invite their friends to.
Yeah, that's great. Dude, and if you're, just so you know, Adam, he's such a driven, go for it kind of guy, but it's been so cool. Even as long as I've known you now, I think like 10 years, to see you invest even more in your marriage and more in your family over the past 10 years, when you could have get even more busy.
Yeah.
You've just seen the priority. So it's been really cool for me to see that. I'm not as driven as you are naturally, but it's been cool to see you put that energy in different directions.
That's been good. And that's taken a lot of hard work. For someone who's wired like me, it takes intentionality. And even the last few weeks with the book release, I've been working a lot more hours than normal. I mean, this morning started at 6 a.m. And I'll probably go till 6 p.m. at least. And I'll probably work a little couple more hours. And then early in the morning, I'm going to get to the office by 7 tomorrow. And so it's been a lot more, but I've really forced myself to take the weekends off. Mm-hmm. And as soon as book time is done, I'm going to go back to a normal schedule. And I'm just relieved to have that coming back. And that's not normal. I would have just kept adding and adding in the past. But I'm just really beginning to realize the blessing that my kids are and my wife is. And I just don't want to miss out on that. Yeah. Because even hugging my oldest son last night, it's so weird. I hugged him and I just had this moment. I'm like, you're becoming a young man.
Yeah.
Like I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was just the angle that I hugged him. I'm like, I feel like I'm hugging an adult right now. And yet you're my oldest son and I'm not going to have this forever.
Yeah. You can't go like that forever without burning out.
No.
And that's a podcast for another time.
Yeah. I've done that before.
So book stuff, second book written. How did you're from South Dakota. Like no one writes books around here. Like no one even thinks about it. I shouldn't say that. Some people think about it, but like how did you get brought to that place to even write before the second one? How did you get brought to the place to write the first book or even to think about it?
Yeah. So I have a unique situation. I feel like any writer, like true writer, is just going to be angry at me right now because a lot of people will write and write and write for years and then get a book deal. I had written a blog post or two and then I got a book deal. I got a book deal because I'm a pastor of a larger church and I have a unique story in some ways. I think that's why I got the deal. But really it came about from a friend of mine, a guy named Tim Willard. He's this unsung author who's one of my favorite authors. He writes a lot like C.S. Lewis. He studied C.S. Lewis, brilliant writer. I can't say enough about Tim. He also helps with a lot of editing and so he has a lot of connections in publishing world. Well, he's come to Embrace a couple of times to speak years ago. And every time he'd come, he'd tell me I need to write a book. And I said, no, no, no. And he's like, you should write a book. And he said, I was like, no. And then finally, the last time he came, he said, I want to talk with you about this. So let's go sit at a coffee shop. So we brought up the idea of writing a book. I shared two ideas. The first one he shot down. The second one, he's like, that's it. What does it look like to pray? Explain it in a way that anybody can understand. And he's like, that's it. He's like, I'm going to get you a phone call. Let me see if I can do that. So he called an agent. I didn't even know what agents were. Called an agent, told him my story. The agent calls me. My first interaction with him was very cold. I mean, like, I'm like, this guy hates me. And through the crazy, he hears the second book idea. He loves it. He tells me to work with Tim, make a book proposal. That process takes about 2-3 months of hard work, not having any idea if I'm going to get a book deal. He doesn't even say I'm going to represent you. I sent him the book proposal. He says I'm in. Still, that doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. That just means he's going to bring it to the different publishers. And so he brings it to the publishers. My friend Tim says, if you get one offer, you'll be lucky. I got 4 offers.
Whoa.
And so all 4 of these different places are bidding on who gets to have the rights to the book. So I end up going with a group called Waterbrook Multnomah. They're a Christian imprint of Penguin Random House, one of the biggest publishers in the world. I signed a 2-book deal with them. This weirdness, I get paid to write the book. I don't get paid from sales. Mm-hmm. And so I get an advance is what it's called. And for me as a pastor, I actually love that I don't make money off of sales. I legitimately lost money on the sales part of my first book, even though I sold like 3-4 times the amount that they were kind of going in. And
you lost money because you bought some.
I bought a lot and gave a lot away or sold them at a lower price than I paid for them.
Yeah, great business model.
Very good business model. I just wanted to get them in the hands of people. Like my heartbeat was to tell people how to pray with that first book. And prayer was something that changed so much about me. And I believed in the book. And so I wanted to get it out to as many people as I could. So I signed a 2-book deal. So that was the first book. The second book was called Love Has a Name. And it was
Before you get into that, what was your other idea that they hated?
Yeah, my first idea was actually the book I always wanted to write. It was called The Clueless Leader. Because I was 24 years old when I started the church, didn't want to start it. For a while, I was listed as one of the youngest mega church pastors in the country. And so I was like, I'm clueless, all this kind of stuff. It was going to be a great leadership book. The guy who I talked with, I got out the first sentence of like Clueless Leader because I was 24 years old. He cut me off and he's like, terrible book. Literally. And even my friend Tim, he let me get out like a full sentence. He's like, yeah, that's a bad idea. I'm like, what? Like, I think that was a great concept, The Clueless Leader. No, it's a terrible idea. I guess people don't want to learn from a clueless leader. So that
they want to learn from people that know how to lead.
They would. Yeah, that's right. And so that was my idea. At some point, maybe I'll write it in another lifetime or something. Yeah,
you might have to self-publish that one.
Yeah, that will be a self-published book. No, but this book called Love as a Name, it was supposed to release, the second book was supposed to release probably a year and a half ago. And yet I've been really honest in interviews and even in the book, I share a little bit about it. I went through just a really horrible, hard season. And you know about that season that I walked through. Leadership-wise, I had to make a decision that was not popular and it was just really, really hard. And from that season, there's nothing I regret. It was just hard. And also I had a ton of things to learn myself. I'm far from perfect. I was genuinely and still am a clueless leader. Mm-hmm. And so there were some things in my life that needed to be addressed as far as being a healthy leader and having a healthy drivenness. And so really I came to the first time in my life, I think that's not an overstatement, that I didn't want to love anybody. Mm-hmm. And usually I just genuinely love people. I mean, that's something that comes naturally to me. The stranger you are, the more I want to be your friend. Every person has a story and I'm just fascinated by it. And so, but this time I did not. I was jaded. I was hurt. I wanted to love my wife, my kids, a family members, and a few close friends, and that's it.
Yeah.
And yet Jesus doesn't let us stay there. Mm-hmm. And so God just began to work in my heart, work in my soul. And I began to think about all the people who had shown me what love is, and more than what love is, who love is, and who love is Jesus. And so Jesus just began to restore me and change me and mold me. And I began to think about all these people. The book is the names of 27 people who have either loved me or I've tried to love them, combined with someone similar that Jesus loved. And so that's the heartbeat of this book. I'm so excited to honor a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. Some of the people, I don't even know who they are, actually. Some of them I had to change their name. Some of them I had to make up a name for them. Like AC Kid is Angry College Kid. And so like I didn't know his name as he was yelling at me. And so that's the book. It's pretty cool to be able to honor people who have shown me who love is.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Denison Ministries, which is a movement creating 7 million culture-changing Christians who are committed to carrying out the truths of the gospel to their sphere of influence through a variety of different ways, which is why Denison Ministries is excited about sponsoring what God is up to on the Conversation podcast. One of the cool ways Denison Ministries helps Christians feel closer to God is through their First 15 devotional. First 15 is designed to help you spend the first 15 minutes of your day experiencing God through scripture, worship, and prayer. You can sign up for First 15 email devotional at first15.org/subscribe or start your day off with First 15 devotional podcast anywhere that you listen.
So in the book, like, I think that's so cool. Each chapter is a name. Can you give me like maybe it's AC Kid or a different chapter? Like, how did you connect that to a story with Jesus? Can you just share like one of those connections that you made?
Yeah. One of my favorite connections that I made in that way is Captain. So Captain, after one of our evening services, one night we had a 6:05 service. I went home. It's the middle of the night in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and it's an off-side street that not many people drive on. And so I'm driving home and there's a man, probably 50 years old, lying in the middle of the road. Now, this isn't an abnormal thing to see in my neighborhood. We have a lot of folks that struggle with addiction. And so you'll see him on the sidewalks in the middle of summer. A lot of times there'll be people laying in the sidewalks, passed out in the middle of the day. Well, it's night and it's cold. It's probably like 18 degrees. I actually wrote it down that night how cold it was, but it was so cold. And I'm like, this is an offside street. He's either going to get hit by a car or he's going to freeze to death. So I get out. I'm like, hey, how's it going? Immediately starts cursing me out. Leave me the F alone. Mm-hmm. I mean, just laying into me. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I can. And so I'm like, he's like, just leave me alone. And I'm like, you're going to freeze to death. And I'm like, let's stand you up. I'll bring you to a shelter. And he's again, just leave me alone. So I get him stood up because I'm going to bring him to a shelter. I thought he was sober enough to at least go there. Well, I turn around. He had fallen into a snowbank. Now he's totally covered. He will freeze to death. It's not a question. And I have to set him up. And I know he's too drunk to bring to a shelter. So I lean him up and I'm like, what's your name? What's your name? And he's just like, Captain. You know, I'm like, I don't know if that's Captain Morgan, his favorite drink, or if it's like his nickname or what. But I'm like, well, Captain, how are you doing? And I just tried to talk to him. I asked him about his kids. He doesn't know this, but I called the cops on him too. And really the heartbeat of this chapter is love doesn't always look like love. Well, I connected that chapter with a guy named Legion in the Bible. Jesus crosses over a sea. He gets out and there's this demon-possessed man that runs up to him and immediately, get away from me, leave me alone, like stay away, just like Captain was to me. And yet Jesus doesn't leave him alone. Instead, he stays there. He casts the demons out of him and the demons go into pigs. And the one man who stays there and doesn't leave, unlike the people in the village that were told that they were constantly chasing him out. And we're told all kinds of information about Legion, by the way. It's pretty fascinating. When you read the Bible, oftentimes you'll find out someone's blind or someone's a leper, but you won't find out more about him. Legion, we're told like all kinds of details, where he lives, what people think of him. It's just kind of fascinating. Mm-hmm. All these things, we know his name, like all this kind of stuff. Well, the one person who doesn't leave and does what he doesn't want to hear is the one person that this man now doesn't want to leave. He wants to stay right next to Jesus. And so love doesn't always look like love. I mean, if he would have been loving in that moment, like the world, Jesus, you should leave him alone. I mean, if he tells you to stay away, the loving thing is to stay away. Well, Jesus stays. He doesn't listen. And sometimes love doesn't look like love. And I sometimes love means having a hard conversation. Sometimes love means saying no. Sometimes love means you need to go get treatment. Sometimes love means this relationship needs a break. Like you know, this friendship just needs to pause. Like we need boundaries. Something needs to change. I was able to share the story of my sister. We brought her freshman year, my sister got kicked out of Morehead State for alcohol and drugs and whatever else. And my parents went and picked her up and brought her from they went to Morehead, Minnesota, then drove past Sioux Falls, South Dakota, down to Canton, South Dakota, and brought her to Keystone. And years later, my sister was adopted.
Keystone is
a treatment center. Yeah. A couple of years later, my sister, who was adopted, she's South Korean, she said, do you want to know the moment I know that mom and dad loved me? And I'm thinking to myself, the 18 years that they faithfully loved you. My parents are awesome. And she's like, no, the day I knew they loved me is when they came and picked me up from Morehead State and brought me to Keystone. Mm-hmm. That's the day I knew that they loved me. And I thought that's the day that I think you'd be angry at them. And she's like, no, I knew that if they did that, sometimes love doesn't always look like love.
Yeah.
And so there's all these different characters that I try to link with Jesus and someone he crossed paths with. And it was so cool to see these stories come alive. Because often we read the Bible and it's these stories and it's like, yeah, that would never happen in my life. And it's like, actually, it's maybe happening all around us. We just don't notice it. And and even with people, it's easy to get jaded right now. There's so many angry people and it's easy to focus on all the people who have hurt and wronged us. But how about focus on all the people who have loved us, who have shown us kindness and mercy and faithfulness and grace and have listened to us and helped us? It begins to change you when you hear those things.
That's great. So you said you started writing this book or were supposed to have this book done a while ago.
Yeah.
And now you've decided to release it in the middle or the end or the beginning of a pandemic. There's
election,
racial uncertainty coming off the heels of the Me Too movement, a lot of causes, a lot of just stuff going on. And now you're releasing a book about love in the middle of what seems like a crazy season or maybe a longer season for our country. Like, has that struck you at all? Like,
yeah, it's crazy because I feel like what I was walking through internally 2 years ago is what our country and world is walking through right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, our world, now I'm at a healthy place, but it feels like our world is at that same place I was 2 years ago. I want to care for my family, a few close friends, and if you disagree with me, well, then mind your own business. Mm-hmm. If you disagree with me, then I hate you. It's such a weird thing if you look at our culture. Our culture is shouting love, love, love. And yet the next thing it says is, unless you disagree with me, then I hate you. Mm-hmm. You know, like love, love. You really think like that politically? You're an idiot.
Yep.
Like you vote like that? I can't be your friend anymore. Like you post that, I'm blocking you. It's like, what? Like I thought, what about love? Well, it's the opposite. I mean, it's what Jesus addressed. Anybody can love them, someone who loves them in return. Mm-hmm. Anybody can do that. And what our world needs to, it's we've lost even like characteristics that I feel like were around when I was younger, the ability to agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's like unless you think exactly like me, and if there's any differences, we can't be friends. We can't unite. We can't worship together. We can't be in the same political party because we can't believe in the same God. It's just like we have a lot more in common than I think we do. And as Christians, there's a few non-negotiables of who is Jesus, our view of scripture, all this kind of stuff. Those are some non-negotiable core things. But even in the church, it's like we look for all the little things we disagree on instead of the places that we agree, which are usually ginormous things. And I think it's been magnified almost by the ability of like social media has magnified things, and then even being social distance has magnified things too. Because you know this too as a pastor, oftentimes we'll get some, not often, but every so often we'll get an email from somebody that sounds like they're burning our house down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll get an email and it's like, oh my gosh, are they lighting my house on fire?
Angry.
They seem so angry. Oh my gosh. And then you meet them face to face, and they're the kindest, friendliest person ever. What changed? Well, you were behind a screen and now you're face to face.
Yeah.
And that's a huge thing. Something changes when a person is no longer a robot to you, they're a human. When someone goes from being a crowd and nameless to having a name and having a story, then all of a sudden you begin to see humanity in them and you begin to care for them. And even if you'd agree to disagree, you begin to notice, oh my gosh, we got a lot in common, and I'm from the same part of the state as you are, and I had that same upbringing as you, and gosh, I wondered why you thought this way. Now that's beginning to make sense.
Yeah.
And I think we've just lost that ability, and as followers of Jesus, we should be the best at this. I just think, like, if you're a follower of Christ, do people who disagree with you still enjoy being around you? You know, like if people disagree with you, do they still respect you?
Yeah.
Do they still like want to hear your thoughts on things? Because we're the aroma of Christ. And you say it all the time. Adults hate being told what to do. And yelling at people and like demeaning people and all this kind of thing has never changed anything but humility and grace and kindness and truth. Wow, that's winsome right now. And I think as followers of Jesus, what an opportunity to show people the love of Jesus. And when we begin to live it out full of grace and truth, it'll be something that people are irresistibly drawn to. And I need that myself. I need to be reminded of that on a regular basis.
I heard, I think it was Tim Keller say once, we aren't drawn primarily to what Jesus said, but what he did.
Yeah.
It's like his act of love on the cross. And it validates everything he said, but I think how much true is that for us? Like when we love well, when we live out that as an action, sacrificially even, which is hard to do, it validates our words. So where can the people get the book? Like what's going on with that? What's kind of the flow from here on out, the release?
So the book releases on Tuesday. I believe this will come out Wednesday. So it released yesterday. And I got an interview with radio stations. I've already done probably 4 or 5 interviews today. This is Monday as we're recording this. Got a bunch of more podcasts I'm doing. I'm not traveling as much with this book because of the COVID. But you can find the book online anywhere books are sold. You can get it on Amazon.com, Target.com, Walmart.com. It's available in stores and online at Barnes & Noble. Most places that have bookstores, the book's available. I'm always surprised by how people carry the book so far and wide. But go get a copy of the book. Buy one for yourself, your family. There's a buy one, get one free offer that you can redeem right now at adamweber.com. So that's pretty cool. It's through the publisher. So go and redeem that offer. You just have to show proof of purchase and you can get a free copy and a bunch of other free giveaways. So it's actually a pretty sweet deal. But that's, and that offer runs out on Saturday. So go do it right now if you hear this.
Yeah. I have some quick hitters about you as a person. But before we do that, I just want you to share in two sentences, which is almost impossible for you. What is your hope out of this book? Like what would you hope? You're a guy, I know this, you don't speak fluff. You hope to move people to action. What would be your greatest hope to come out of this?
I think through hopefully my just candidness and genuineness and cheesiness that it would move somebody to love another person and that they would discover the wonderful journey it is when we begin to live that way. We think that loving other people is only for the benefit of the person who's receiving it, but it's genuinely for the person as well. And so I hope through my stories, it just moves people to action. And the last chapter is the fact that God loves us and Jesus loves you and me as well. And that's a chapter I feel like I could read 25 times and still need to hear it again. So hopefully it just moves people to love like Jesus.
Yeah, that's great. And some of you only know Adam as a voice on this podcast or on the sermon, but I just want to say, like, he's a guy that lives that out through and through. One of the ways you inspire me most about your life is that you do, like, just love people in those moments. You're a person that doesn't just speak words, that you move to action. And I've said, similar to Hudson, I think this book is better than your first. Not because the first one wasn't good, but I feel like this one is, it really is an imprint from your heart and who you are as a person. And I think you have a lot to share with us. So I've obviously read through it at one point when it was on version one or something.
Yeah, 1.0.
But I'm excited to take my second time through it to read it again.
I'm grateful for that.
So a couple of just quick hitters to get to know you even a little bit better. Some of these are good. How would you describe your current style?
My fashion?
Yeah.
My gosh. I don't know. Like trying to be cool.
Trying to be,
I don't know. I've always dressed a little bit like this, like just as far as unique. Like even in college, it's kind of like a rustic, relevant.
Is that a thing?
I have no idea.
So Adam Weber's style is rustic, relevant.
I feel like that's what I would have to say about myself since freshman year of high school or college.
Yeah.
Okay. Rustic, relevant.
What leader do you know right now who you wish was running for president?
Oof. What leader do I know right now that I wish was running for president?
We're in election. I thought that was a good.
Oh my gosh. That's a really good question. I would say somebody, Benjamin Watson, I think would be interesting.
Oh, the tight end from
New
England?
Yeah, he's a guy that I just respect when he speaks. And then I'm going to say two pastors that would never run for office, Mark Batterson and John Weiss.
Oh.
I think they would make phenomenal presidents.
Our mayor, too. He'd do a good job.
Paul Tenhanken, let's do it. He's going to go somewhere. And regardless of where you are or think of him, I've never seen somebody who unifies more people.
Yeah.
Seriously. Everybody seems to love him.
It's true. Maybe because he's so attractive. But... favorite song right now, not Christian.
Oh my gosh. I have so many. I can't remember his name right now. Oh my gosh. I'm thinking. He's got all the tattoos on his face.
Post Malone?
That's anything by Post Malone.
Post Malone.
I love all of his stuff.
I don't know if I've listened to a song by Post Malone.
And then who did I preach on in the one series? Oh my gosh.
Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish. I love everything from her too.
That's not one song, but we'll keep going on. Last thing you watched on Netflix.
Last thing I watched on Netflix. I'll say the last film or thing that I've watched is I watched The Chosen film. So that's not on Netflix. And then I watched a movie last night, Fried Green Tomatoes. What a wonderful movie.
That's an old movie, right?
Really old.
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. It was a great movie. Stayed up till 11 o'clock last night to watch it. And I'm like, I need to go to bed because I'm getting up early in the morning.
What's your most useless talent?
I don't have many talents. It's not useless. The thing that's coming to mind is using a typewriter really well. or driving an old car. I know to drive like a 1936 Chevy.
Yeah, those are very useless.
And most people cannot drive a 1936 Chevy. It sounds easy. I'm just telling you, it's hard.
I'll have to try sometime.
It is so hard. I'm like, this cannot be. I always joke, I could leave my 36 Chevy idling out front of my house and still nobody would steal it because they wouldn't get anywhere with it.
Two more. Favorite cereal.
Favorite cereal. If I could just eat it endlessly, Fruity Pebbles or Cocoa Pebbles.
Really?
Love it.
Do you like the milk afterwards when it's like...
I like it afterwards, but I like them crisp, so I have to eat them fast.
Yeah.
I'm one of the fastest eaters. You found that too.
Yeah, you are crazy. That is a talent.
I eat fast.
Oh my God. This guy, I can't, like, you'll literally sit down to eat, you'll take a bite and you'll look up, he's done.
It's crazy.
Last thing, and this is going to be a little bit difficult. If you were to write a book number three right now and you had to pick a topic, what would you pick?
I don't know what I would
pick. Clueless leader?
Yeah, the clueless leader is not going to happen. I think it would be something around making a difference somehow. But I don't know if it's like a twin brother or like an older brother of Love Has a Name, but just maybe making a difference in what that looks like. Something I don't know what to do with it. And it's in the book, actually. Chapter 17 is the process of me restoring an old house.
Mm.
And it's been such a spiritual experience. Like, I have thought more about Jesus restoring that house than I have doing anything away from, like, truly spiritual discipline sort of thing. So I don't know. Like, it's just something about making a difference and how God can use us. And even, like, the run projects that we do at Embrace here, that's just something that spurs on my heart. It'll be interesting to see what God brings to the surface. I always thought I'd write two books and be done. But I really enjoyed writing this book. The first one was really hard and it just felt like a marathon. This one felt like I couldn't write it fast enough. And I only wish I could edit it another 25 times.
Mm-hmm. So you have Love as a Name, Making a Difference. You could like kind of combine that, maybe call it Love Does.
Yeah. That's right. Like that. Hey, Bob Goff, would you mind if I just like kind of used your book? Like, no, yeah. I actually think it could be at Love as a Name is kind of a sister to that book. His new Love Everybody or Everybody, his newest book, I actually did not read it. I still haven't read it because I didn't want to be influenced by his writing because I'm like, I feel like this could be similar, kind of a similar heartbeat. I still don't know if that's the case, but Bob Goff is somebody that I have great respect for. And another guy that's wired similar to Bob Goff is the worship leader, Chris McLarney, is another guy that's just so, and those two people are just wonderful, fantastic humans. Yeah.
That's all we got. We shared your whole life in two episodes. We didn't miss anything.
We did not miss a single thing.
I did have a question about how you became bald, but I think we're out of time. So that would be that would take too long. Man, thanks for sharing your story with us. I know anyone that's listening to the podcast probably really enjoyed it. Hopefully you got a couple laughs out of the deal too. But like Adam said, whether it's Amazon, Target, Walmart, go pick up a copy of his book. And that's all we have.
For listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.